from the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
For those in recovery, support from friends and family often leads to better outcomes. Here's to those who are essential to helping people find their path to recovery. Visit cdc.gov/stopoverdose for information about treatment options and how to support those experiencing addiction.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be. To be.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
No Sean Pendergast today. Brandon Scott in, holding it down with Seth Payne. And I wanted to do this because, you know, Nick Caserio got a lot of praise in a piece that The Athletic did, looking at the state of different organizations. And it was an anonymous piece, but, you know, I think we liked it because most of it was positive for the Texans, you know.
The author wasn't anonymous, but the agents were anonymous.
Fair enough. That's a good clarification there. The agents themselves were anonymous, so it's basically an anonymously sourced article on sort of the state of the league and different things like that. But it did get me thinking, and part of this also was being at the Texans season premiere last night. It got me thinking about their various draft classes. Saw some of those guys. And of course, you know, they got some young players on this team that they're expecting a lot of big things from. But I wanted to just kind of break it down, go over them all. We did it on the 2021 class. We did it on the 2022 class in the 7 o'clock hour. So I encourage y'all to go check that out in the Odyssey app or even on our YouTube channel. You can just kind of scroll back a couple hours and find that. But let's move on to 2023. The sophomore year, if you will. The class of sophomores, if you will. C.J. Stroud, Will Anderson Jr., Juice Scruggs, Tank Dell, Henry Tortoa. And then on the back end here, you have Jared Patterson. And, of course, Xavier Hutchinson, someone who made the team, who I think people are rightfully excited about based on the training camp and preseason that he had. I would go with it like this, Seth. C.J. Stroud, we've talked a lot about.
Yeah.
Will Anderson Jr., we've also talked a lot about. Mm-hmm. I would point out, we can just start with Will. For me, I don't have a whole lot of questions about C.J. I think C.J. is going to be just fine. I'm excited to watch him. Want to see how everything just develops in year two. With Will Anderson, I am curious on what it looks like with his refined pass rush moves, which he started to develop toward the end of last year, but weren't really obvious to the naked eye early in the year. It just seemed like he had that bull rush. And, yo, his get-off is phenomenal.
Like, he gets across the line of scrimmage very, very quickly.
Oh, yeah. It is insane. It is insane the way he's able to do that at that rate. And so, in a lot of ways, he just didn't need a lot of moves because he moved so damn quickly. There wasn't a whole lot you could do with him. And he's stronger than he looks, probably, to be the size that he is. I want to see the refined pass rush moves and, by the way, the ankle injury that's limited him as of late and I don't think is going to keep him out of week one, but we don't know for sure yet. I don't think it is. That is also a mild concern for me, something to put a pin in, something that I'll be thinking about throughout the season until it doesn't appear to be a concern any longer.
Yeah, people keep bringing up the Steph Curry example, where Steph Curry, early in his career, he just had chronic ankle issues. And it looked like it would be, you know, early in Steph Curry's career, it looked like, oh, promising guy, but you know what? He might just not be physically built for this. He figured out a way to keep his ankles healthy, and it worked out all right for him. He did all right.
Yeah,
unfortunately.
Steph Curry, good at basketball, you think?
Yeah, if Will Anderson ends up being a football version of Steph Curry, that would I'd be pleased with that outcome. I think the other thing, too, with Will Anderson is that back when in college and in the NFL, when he looks best with his hands, it's been when he's rushing on the inside. He's like a kung fu master when he's inside the offensive tackle or when he comes around on a game or a blitz and he's rushing on the inside. Last year, he hadn't really transferred that to when he's rushing on the outside. And it sounds like it should be the same thing, but there's a whole different timing and rhythm to it. Your footwork is different. And I know it's in him because he's lethal with it on the inside. I'm just hoping to see that he's figured out how to transfer being so good with his hands when he's rushing off the edge. Because that's one of the things that really kept... There were times where he turned things into bull rushes far more often than he should have or than he needs to, especially when you're going against these 335-pound freakish athletes where some of those guys are just hoping you're going to try to bull rush them. You know, Laremy Tunsil hopes you try to bull rush him because he's just going to sit on it, let you get a few yards of progress, and then there you go. So, there's still upside with – there's still things Will Anderson needs to improve on. The one thing – I did this earlier in the year, Brandon – and I can't find the list in my Google Docs, but I had kind of just casually said, you know, Sean Pendergast at the time I was talking to him, most of these guys who are great pass rushers, they get single digit sacks in their first year. And then it's in their next year that they kind of blow up. And I went back and looked at the guys who were the sack leaders over the last 10 years. And I was kind of shocked by how accurate I was. It's very rare that the Nick Bosa's, the J.J. Watts, the Aaron Donalds, any of those guys had double-digit sacks in their first year. When they do, it's like 10 or 11 sacks at most. But then in their second year, in Bosa's case, he missed his second year, so it was in his third year, but his second year of playing, that's when they really take off. And it kind of speaks to just how much of a science pass rushing is, that as good as those guys were, they were raw by NFL standards in their rookie year. So, and it doesn't look, lots of guys get single digit sacks in their first year and then never get double digit sacks ever. So it's not like it's definitely going to happen that way. But right now, he's on the normal course of progression for guys who do become elite pass rushers.
Yeah. I mean, he was able to win NFL Defensive Rookie of the Year despite, I mean, I think that even speaks to the point that you're making. Like, the standard for rookie pass rusher, even elite rookie pass rusher, isn't necessarily double digit sacks. And yeah, I know he's got, you know, we're in a more analytically friendly environment these days, and there are some advanced stats that were friendly to Will Anderson that,
right,
if a lot of people and voters studied them, they would have been up on Will Anderson very early on in the year, even when he was struggling to kind of finish plays and get sacks. But I do think him winning that award, and combined with the fact that we're more aware with the better numbers that we have, kind of exposed him to more eyes. It's like, not, it's not just, hey, let's see who got the most sacks. Who was most disruptive in a game? And Will Anderson was often that, despite not having this, like, diverse repertoire, if you will.
My favorite thing about Will Anderson was that he rejected those advanced analytics, because on the pass rushing side, because, you know, I do embrace the analytics where it's appropriate, but when it comes to some of those pass rush win rate stats and everything, as of right now, where they are in the development of them, they're garbage. They really, like, some of them are based on GPS data and like how close you get to a quarterback. And Will, I was really excited when I heard Will talk towards the end of the season about how, like, yeah, you know, that double team rate and the win rate and stuff, like those weren't telling the whole story. There were parts where I just wasn't doing things as well as I needed to. And they were a good sign, and they were a good, it was good that he was doing as well as he was in them, but they kind of hid some of the bigger issues that he had. And I don't even like calling them issues, because they're normal rookie pass rusher stuff. I was really glad that Will understood it for what it was, that Yeah, he was getting close but no cigar a lot, but there were very it wasn't bad luck.
Yeah.
Sometimes you can have a great year rushing the passer and you only end up with 9 sacks, but it's because of bad luck. With Will, it wasn't because of bad luck. It was because he hadn't developed some of those things that you need to do in the last 0.75 seconds of a pass rush to actually finish the deal. So, like, there was no part of him that was deluding himself into thinking, like, no, I'm actually kicking ass. Like, he knew that there was work he had to do.
Yeah, he talked to us on Radio Row ahead of the Super Bowl about finishing plays and said very plainly as well, like, as a defensive end, it is about sacks. Like, he made it very plain, didn't try to – like very black and white, no gray area, no nuance. Just look, you as a defensive end, when you're trying to be a premier pass rusher in this league, you want to get sacks. You want to complete the play, finish the play, and get sacks. He talked about that on Radio Row. We talked about it again with him during training camp, right there on the practice field. And so he's very. I give Will Anderson credit for being very self-aware. Like, I think him and CJ are alike in that way, especially for young players. Very self-aware, but then also willing to correct and work and work on things like a true student of the game, and did not think that just because he's Will Anderson and we've been talking about him since his sophomore year at Alabama and all of these great things that he was just like the best thing since sliced bread and that he had already arrived and didn't need to improve on things. He has taken criticism, I think, to heart in all of the right ways and seemingly applied it to his game, or at least I want to see it translated when I watch him out there in 2024.
Yeah, that's I think there's a lot of I think sometimes these days people say, well, pressures matter more than sacks, and it's a really nuanced topic, probably better suited for a podcast, but it annoys the hell out of me because it turns into one of those classic sports discussions where it has to be either or. Like, they're of paramount importance, or no, they don't matter at all. Like, the answer is somewhere in between. It flat out is. The fact of the matter is, if you get a boatload of pressures over time, unless something else is wrong, you're also going to get a boatload of sacks over time. And it might fluctuate from year to year, but the really good pass rushers are consistently in the double digits. We're like, Jadeveon Clowney's a great example of a guy that gets a boatload of pressures and everything, but there's very specific reasons he doesn't get double-digit sacks, and it's some of his deficiencies as a pass rusher. It's like there's nobody that watches year in and year out that thinks that Jadeveon Clowney is one of the premier pass rushers. It's that he's underrated. He's underrated because he doesn't get those sacks, but it doesn't mean that he's also, no, he's actually one of the best pass rushers in the league.
Yeah, underrated. In other words, try blocking him. Ask the people that have to go up against him how pleasant of an experience it is, especially when he's right and when he's healthy. It's not that great of an experience. Well, real quick on Will Anderson, dealing with an ankle injury, seemingly on track to play week one, but we'll see how things play out next week. I think it's going to be really important monitoring practice, see if he's got his helmet, how active he is in practice. But injured now, dealing with the ankle injury, we'll see how things play out. And I want to mention your injury report brought to you by Mo Karam Law. Want to point that out. As we go along with this class, another one that I want to bring up to you, Tank Dell, as we mentioned injuries, Tank Dell coming back from an injury, obviously, had an unfortunate incident during the offseason where he suffered a gunshot wound. So he's coming back, let's just be plain about it, from a broken leg and a gunshot wound. And he looked good in training camp, looked good, I thought, in the preseason, obviously. I feel like with Tank Dell, it's easy to kind of not forget because he's really an exciting player. But with all the attention going to Stephon Diggs and that acquisition, and then Nico Collins getting his contract, I feel like Tank Dell could very well be like their touchdown leader or like some random offensive stat leader for this team, even if he's not definitively their best player or even their best pass catching option.
Well, I think the biggest thing with Tank is that when you've got those other two wide receivers out there, it creates more space for all three of them at any given moment. But Tank's the one that's got still, I think, the best ability to all of a sudden seep through the coverage or sneak his way into a seam way, way, way downfield, or, you know, sneak behind the coverage because they've got, because those defensive backs have so many tracer bullets flying around in front of them. And then also just on the underneath stuff, the run after the catch ability, that he's just in his physical prime more so than Stephon Diggs. Stephon Diggs, I think, is underrated for his run after the catch ability. But yeah, Dell might be the guy that has the fewest receptions out of all of them, but the most touchdowns.
Yes, that's a better way of saying what I was trying to say. That's exactly
That's why I felt like with both him and Nico, when I think both of them have kind of mentioned what their receiving yardage goals are at some point in the season, I'd rather have them focus on touchdowns. I think because that's more in their control. It's a weird thing to say, but like, yeah, I think the touchdowns, because it can be based on the run after the catch, I think that that's more in their control than the actual total number of targets and everything else that goes along with it.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember if it was just straight up poor tackling or if even Tank Dell, at his diminutive size, is somewhat underrated for breaking tackles.
Well, yeah.
And I mean, he's a little dude. Don't get me wrong. I understand.
Yeah. But kind of shifty. Some of it, too, when you look at that touchdown in the Steelers game, one of the reasons that worked as well as it did and that he had as much space as he did was that he really widened his route at the beginning and really pulled that inside defender out before he came back across the field. And it's kind of some of that nuanced route running stuff that both he and Nico Collins are really good at for young. Well, Nico's not young anymore, but Slowick's got them working the defensive backs the right way, and that creates a lot of extra space too.
100%. He is Seth Payne. I'm Brandon Scott in for Sean Pendergast. As we roll along, coming up next, I got a position group that I feel like we're not talking about enough. I want to get Seth Payne's thoughts on it. That's next on Payne and Pendergast Sports Radio 6.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be. To be.
Sometimes in football, you need just a little more for that first down. You need to be pushing the pile. And on our new podcast, we'll give you that extra effort.
I'm Mike Renner, a longtime NFL analyst who helped develop player evaluation systems that every NFL team uses to this day.
And I'm Kyle Long, former All-Pro offensive lineman in the NFL who knows a thing or two about getting people moving.
You'll get expertise from inside the trenches and behind the tape for 4 episodes every week. So make sure you download and subscribe to the Pushing the Pile podcast on the Odyssey app.
Recovery from addiction can take many forms, and quite often, it's a team effort. For those in recovery, having support often leads to a better outcome. And for those supporting people in recovery, they celebrate every milestone. Here's to family, friends, loved ones, healthcare providers, and community groups who are essential to helping people find their path to recovery. If you or someone you know is experiencing addiction, visit cdc.gov/stopoverdose to learn more about the various treatment options available.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
So I was surprised that I had not gotten around to this during training camp or the preseason yet. Brandon Scott, by the way, in for Sean Pendergast here with Seth Payne on Payne and Pendergast. I had not met Cade Stover in person yet. I was on the Zoom call when he was drafted, I believe, but I don't think I had interacted with him in person yet. Got to meet him and shake his hand last night at the Texans season premiere, but got me thinking about what, in my opinion at least, is an underrated and under-discussed position group. I thought it was a bit of a blow that Tekan Quatoriano went down again in the preseason and therefore is, again, not going to be healthy for another year. But overall, I did have some hopes for him kind of being like this versatile guy who could be, you know, big enough to serve as sort of a traditional blocking tight end, but also with some pass catching ability. But either way, you've got Dalton Schultz, you've got Cade Stover, and you've got Brevin Jordan, who is a very, as we talked about earlier in the show, specific kind of player. But I want to get your opinion, Seth, on the tight end group. Am I overselling this a little bit by trying to position it as they are an under-discussed group? Because I think there are going to be really important weapons for CJ Stroud this season.
I don't know if they're under-discussed. I think that in a lot of ways, it's just they're not going to be the marquee. I don't think any one of those guys are going to be the marquee dudes or, you know, be propelled onto all-pro status or anything by this offense or everything else that's in it. I think that Dalton Schultz you feel really good about for the things he already did last year. I think Brevin Jordan, you like his versatility. Cade Stover, I think, already has a good relationship with C.J. Stroud going back to Ohio State. And we saw in the preseason that C.J. is very comfortable and trusting that Cade Stover is going to be where he's supposed to be. I think Cade Stover is a guy that's only been playing tight end for 2 years. You know, he converted from linebacker full-time to tight end for his last 2 years at Ohio State. I think that he's a much better route runner and receiver than you would expect to be. It's just that he's got work to do on the blocking side of things. And I've seen good flashes of it, but I've also seen moments where you can tell, okay, he's not what I would call a good blocker by NFL tight end standards yet. But I think he's got the potential to be that. So right now, the way I'm looking at the tight ends is I think they're going to be used a lot. I think especially there's a lot of times where instead of hitting the check down, you can hit a tight end, even if he's the fourth option in any given route tree. But if you want to be like genuinely, if like a really, really scary offense, you'd love to have a guy that's both a really good pass catcher and also a blocker as well. So George Kittle, you know, and that's the easy comparison. But Gronkowski would be the other one. And that goes both D'Amico and Nick Caserio have firsthand experience of what having a tight end who's also a really good blocker can do for an offensive coordinator. Because then the defense is stuck in a bind as to, all right, well, do we keep an extra linebacker on the field because they could run out of this formation, or do we feel comfortable just having five defensive backs? It puts defenses in a big bind. Yeah. And that's where I still get angry retroactively over anybody claiming that Travis Kelce is better than Gronkowski, because Kelce just does not put defenses in a bind that same way that Gronkowski did. But that's where the intrigue for me is what can Cade Stover become as a blocker? I think at this point, it's not both Dalton Schultz and Brevin Jordan work at it. It's not like they don't try to block, but they're far enough into their careers that I'm not banking on one of them all of a sudden transitioning into becoming a great blocker. So for me, Cade Stover is the hope. He's the hope that, all right, maybe he can develop into that guy.
Kelce over Gronkowski has to be recency bias, right? Like I'm talking about from, let's say somebody with the intellect, with the football intellect of a former player like yourself, or people who have covered the league, like, you know, for a long time, people who really know what they're talking about, okay? Not just any old body, but people who really know what they're talking about. If they go Kelce over Gronkowski, they don't really believe that, right? That's got to be recency bias.
It's a fantasy-driven stat, I think. I think it's more about Kelce as a receiver is so lethal and he's so good that maybe now that he's been doing it for such a long time, and especially after last year where he just wasn't at his peak physical abilities, but in the playoffs it didn't matter. I think that this is one of the things that Jalen Ramsey, there's like one thing that an active player who's a really good player said that still annoys me to this day, was Jalen Ramsey was trying to talk smack about the Patriots. And he said that Gronkowski wasn't that good because all you have to do is put a cornerback on him and then you can cover him. I'm like, yeah, that's the whole point. Like, you're devoting a – all you have to do is put a cornerback on the tight end.
Yeah.
Right. And then go ahead and try to stop the run when you've got a cornerback in there instead of a linebacker or even a safety.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, a tight end where all you have to do is put a cornerback on him to cover him, that's kind of an issue.
Yeah.
Kind of a problem.
And ideally, you want your cornerbacks to be able to cover the receivers.
You know? You'd like to be using that guy as a receiver.
It screws up the matchups there because it's like, okay, so do you have an extra corner out there or who's guarding that receiver over there? You know,
when you do run the ball, that's one extra light body and one less heavy body on the field to defend the run. So yeah. I get it and I understand it. It just... it's weird to say. I feel in some ways Gronkowski is actually underrated because he wasn't on the same par as Travis Kelce as a pure receiver. Kelce's getting credit because he's not a complete tight end. That's the thing that bothers me about it. It's like because he's not actually genuinely the full package, somehow he gets extra credit for that. It annoys me.
Yeah. Well, and see, maybe I'm just remembering it wrong, and I understand the point that you're making that Kelce's the better pass catching tight end, but it's not like he's, you know, like Gronk was a slouch in that way. Like Gronk was a cheat code.
Yeah.
He was an all out cheat code. The reason why Tom Brady was able to have the kind of career he did without having a number one wide receiver other than Randy Moss for that short period of time, I think, especially on the back end, obviously, you know, when Gronk is there, is because he had Gronk. You know, right. It's like, okay, who needs a number one receiver when you've got this guy who is unlike anything that we've ever seen? So it's recency bias because, yeah, you can say Kelce's a better pass catcher or whatever, but it's not like Gronk couldn't do it or like he wasn't lethal at it. And then there's that duality aspect of it, of, you know, passing and blocking and what the hell are they going to do out of this play?
Right, no, and when I got the first article that popped up when I had searched Travis Kelce versus Rob Gronkowski, it goes in and it's making a case where Kelce has surpassed Gronkowski now for all of these reasons, and every single one is a receiving stat. You know, like all of them are receiving stats until you get down to all pros and stuff like that. I think Kelce has surpassed now. This is a couple years old. He surpassed Gronk in a couple of like Pro Bowl selections and receiving. As of 2020, at the beginning of 2023, Gronk still had 92 receiving touchdowns compared to Kelce's 74. Like, so that's a pretty big receiving stat there. But in a lot of the accumulating stats, the targets, receptions, yards, all that, Kelce had gotten above him, but you're banking on receiving there more so than the complete and total package of the position they play, which is tight end.
Yeah, so the Texans don't have a Gronk. They don't have a Travis Kelce. They don't have a George Kittle, okay? And that's no knock to the guys that they do have. Those guys are just special in that way. So they don't have that guy. I do like the collection of guys that they have, the complement of guys that they have, the upside of Cade Stover, I'm really excited about. Here's my request, Seth. Here's the thing that I will ask of the tight ends. Not that they would do it for me. They're going to do it for themselves and for the team. But this would be my request nonetheless. Be an option. Be a viable option for CJ on third down. So these third down issues that the team talked about or that the coaches talked about early in the offseason, you remember this, Seth. Bobby Slowick, I think C.J. Stroud as well, but Bobby Slowick and Nick Caserio and D'Amico Ryans are ones that I really remember talking about wanting to be better on third down, more consistent on third down throughout the year. I think for the entire season leading up to that final game in Indianapolis, they were somewhere in the back half of the league on third down, somewhere around 18, somewhere between 18 and 20, like not terrible, but certainly not great. And a stated goal of theirs was to be better on third down. To me, and I know that two of these tight ends are guys that they had last year, and one of them is now Cade Stover, who's new to the position. But one of the things I'd like to see between the tight end group and also, for that matter, the addition of Stephon Diggs, okay, is for them to be much better on third down for CJ Stroud in year two and with Bobby Slowick in year two as the offensive coordinator?
Yeah.
Between those position groups.
I think an interesting conversation when you talk about the tight ends where, you know, in discussion in the offseason is that if Cade Stover comes along, I think that the Texans might have a case of having the deepest tight end group in the league. If you look at both the Chiefs and the 49ers, their third string guy is a relative afterthought. The second string guy is a little bit of like, okay, yeah, Noah Gray, there's something there, and I like him, but it's not necessarily, I think, given what Brevin Jordan could be in this offense and given maybe what Cade Stover could become overall. And I'm not predicting that Cade Stover is going to be all pro and everything. There's some similarities to George Kittle, but he's not the athlete that George Kittle is. But in terms of having three viable options that you feel really good about, that's the part that I think maybe they're under-discussed. I think there's some real upside and potential there that in any given week, given what the matchups are, you've got different guys with different skill sets that could end up going off big because of everything else out on the field.
Another thing that I like about it, so this is going to be kind of silly, but entertain me for a second here. I like that C.J. Stroud seems to have really good relationships with all of them. We've heard him talk about Dalton Schultz and how important that relationship is. Dalton Schultz, a real truth teller behind the scenes on that team, really respected in that way. A lot of people might not know that. Also, Cade Stover, he played with Cade Stover in college. We already understand that relationship. Brevin Jordan, he's pretty tight with. Another guy who he's got good relationships with. One thing I know about C.J. Stroud, and this is kind of speaking to that point about on third downs and taking the check down like you're mentioning, C.J. Stroud's greedy. You know, C.J. Yeah. Stroud wants to push the ball downfield. He wants the big play. Like, he wants to be – he is great and wants to be great and wants to make those big plays. I'm glad that he's got good relationships with the tight ends, so he's a little bit extra motivated to feed them the ball as well and to utilize them – as well, because they need to be better on third down, and they need to take the easier money when it's there. I'm glad he likes those guys, because he'll be more prone to throw to them.
Right, yeah, and again, that goes back to kind of like where some quarterbacks might be looking for the check down. I think CJ's got the ability to feed it to the tight end on a guy, you know, and get it on a guy that's running full speed across the field. I did think in the preseason a couple times, in that Steelers game in particular, it almost felt I don't know if it was the right move to choose to try to force the ball to Dalton Schultz down the right sideline when he was being covered by a safety one-on-one. It wasn't I think there was a little bit of, you know, maybe a little preseason, like, let's be sure we spread the ball around and be sure everybody gets their targets and you know, get everybody involved, and you're only going to have limited series to do it. So maybe that's an overly generous way of looking at it, but I think CJ's very conscious of finding that balance. And I know because he's talked about Tom Brady in this regard, that, you know, there is a part, there's an element there of getting guys touches just to keep them involved, just like in basketball. There's some guys, like with the big men, where you want to get them their touches just to keep them really in the flow and engaged. And if you want to go Joe old school on it, you might say, no, they'll get the ball when it's coming to them. But you got to accommodate for human psychology a little bit. And I think CJ understands that part of it.
NFL agents had some things to say about the Houston Texans. Were points made? We'll talk about that next on Payne and Pendergast.
Live from the Twin Peaks studios, Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
That's right. Sports Radio 610 does present Payne and Pendergast. Brandon Scott is in for Sean Pendergast. Last segment, by the way, I appreciate Sean for allowing me to keep the seat warm, man. It's always a good time to hang out with you, for sure, Seth,
yeah,
man. I appreciate it.
No, it's been fun, Brandon.
No
fun
doubt.
Couple of days. And I know you're working like a 16-hour day today, so I appreciate the fact that you squeezed in time to do this show before you go on to work two other jobs.
Yes.
So I appreciate it.
Yes. And you know what? Seth is not exaggerating at all. Like, that is exactly what I did, and I couldn't be happier to do it. You brought so
you
this.
Start, to, you start ahead, today at you started your day at 5 a.m. today, and then you finish up at what, 9 p.m.?
Yeah, I finish my day once I'm done with all of the jobs that I do. I finish up the day at 9 p.m. And honestly, Seth, and so I could get good sleep last night, I actually went to bed as soon as I got home from the Texan season premiere last night. I did watch the Astros. I'm not going to say as soon as, but as soon as the Astros game was over, I went straight to bed and then decided to get up at 3, actually, to make sure I could work on the show. Because not done, other than watching the Astros and thinking about the show, I hadn't done a whole lot of show prep at that point. So I got up early enough to make sure I could get it in. So, yeah, it's actually from about 3:30 a.m. to 9 o'clock p.m.
Dude, you know what? That's one of the things. I think a lot of people listening can probably relate to this because it's an ongoing struggle as you get older. But it's almost like being you've got to find that balance between wanting to be prepared but also understanding that if you're prepared but don't have enough sleep, all the preparation is for naught. And it's the same thing that like major league pitchers and NFL football coaches go through, and or just anybody in just everyday life. Like, okay, you understand the importance of sleep, and that if you want to function well, then you got to have a certain amount of sleep. And yet, you got all these nagging things that you feel like I don't know if I'm going to be able to sleep if I don't have these right. So you got, it's hard to get to that point where you genuinely trust that, all right, I'm actually better off getting my sleep right now, and then I'll be more efficient in the morning.
See,
that's hard, man. A lot of professions people have that struggle.
Well, I it's not like I knew it or anything. I had to learn through trial and error. Like,
yeah,
I've tried to do this before, you know, and I've learned sort of the difference of, hey, burning out at night when like you feel like you got a cram, but you really don't have a whole lot left in the tank. You know, like I drank wine last night. You know, I was still kind of living in the moment, had a good time. I wasn't trying to prep for no show, but I knew.
Well, it was your job duty to be at that event last night. You know, partaking of that was important. You're doing work.
Yeah. No,
just as hard as any other job.
I did not. I'll be honest. I did not feel guilty about that fun time last night being considered work or part of my job. Like the majority of people there were at work technically, just in a very kind of pleasant manner and capacity. Yeah. So I'm not complaining about that part. That part of it was pretty cool. I just wasn't going to lie to myself once I got home about, all right, now I'm going to plan the best version of Pain and Pendergast I've ever done while I'm like operating on fumes, you know, like it wasn't going to happen.
I'm always intrigued by people that have to give presentations because I know, you know, my brother-in-law started off in life as a like classic, you know, he's really smart, went to Princeton, went into investment banking, you know, so he did the whole like 3 years of just working ridiculous hours at putting together presentations and stuff. But the people that like you've got a big sales pitch or something and you go and you pull an all-nighter getting the presentation together, but then you have to show up on very little sleep and present it to skeptical people who are going to ask hard questions. I wouldn't be good in that situation.
Yeah.
I'd be the guy that'd be like, hey, guys, don't you think, you know, ideally, we want to have at least 6 hours of sleep tonight.
I am fortunate enough to, like, I participate in a lot of meetings. People who don't know, I do some work at the Houston Chronicle as well. I am in a lot of those meetings and don't have to really talk much or lead any of them. And I am relieved for that because I'm like, man, I'm doing way too many things. Just let me come in here and do the job that you've asked me to do. Don't ask me to think any more extra than I'm already having to do. You know, given all the different places that my attention span has to occupy. I don't want to lead these meetings. I don't want to talk in these meetings.
Yeah, that's
you know another profession that is, you could argue, overworked. I would say NFL GMs and even NFL agents for that matter. And those two collide here in the Athletic's latest survey of anonymous NFL agents talking about the state of different franchises, how they're the type of off seasons that they had, how well they're run or not so well they're run. And the Texans, I thought it stood out to me. You tell me what stood out to you the most, Seth. It stood out to me that the Texans are now, and this plays out on television, but it played out here in this anonymous, in this survey of anonymous agents. The Texans are like just universally respected now. Nobody talks about them as a doormat or as a laughing stock in the way and manner in which they used to. And that is, it's refreshing, but it's also, I got to be honest, just new. You know, I'm expecting some snark or some backhanded compliment, or even sometimes if there's a positive thing to be said, to possibly disagree with it. Be like, oh, they don't know what they're talking about. That's actually a bunch of crap here or whatever. No, all of the universal love and appreciation to me is, you know, based off of D'Amico Ryans and the ship that he and Nick Caserio are running right now. It's warranted. That's what stands out to me about what these agents had to say to the Athletic.
Well, and I think honestly, it's funny because, you know, with different contexts and different people involved, you know, the right move can be the right. The same strategy can be a brutally awful strategy in some situations, but it can be brilliant in others. I've been consistent in this. I think Cal McNair, from the time he took full ownership, or I guess full control of the team, I think he's very much empowered the football people to make the football decisions. And that's worked out very well so far with Nick Caserio and D'Amico Ryans. But it is the same approach that led to, you know, Bill O'Brien and Jack Easterby kind of running roughshod over the organization for a period of 18 to 24 months. And it was disastrous. So, Cal and Hannah learned some lessons through that period to where, you know, you see this with owners all the time, kind of trying to find that appropriate level of intervention, how much oversight, all of that. But I think the willingness to let your football people do football things, it's the right strategy for most owners, as long as you take care of that minor detail of hiring the right GM and hiring the right head coach.
The right football people to do the football things, right?
And also it super speeds the process if you also happen to find the right quarterback along the way. So that's, and I always say, I say it jokingly, and sometimes people don't realize I'm saying it jokingly. All it takes is finding the right GM, the right head coach, and the right quarterback. It's simple. It's incredibly simple. And yet really, 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 really hard to do. So if the next version of the Texans, whenever that might come, I think probably the lesson that Cal and Hannah learned is that, man, you know, they'll learn a lot of lessons along the way about, you know, who good football people are, who bad football people are. But it's just that those several decisions at the onset of it all, if you do it right and you give those people the latitude to do what you hired them to do, it can be really good.
It feels like
really it's hard to do.
It's hard to do on each front. But the fact that it is three-pronged is what's also hard about it, right? Like, it's obviously harder to do it if you've only got two out of the three, or certainly one out of the three, which is where the Texans were not so long ago when Deshaun Watson was performing at the height of his powers, but you weren't really sure about the fit with the head coach, or even if the head coach himself was the right guy. And then he becomes the general manager, you know for a fact that wasn't supposed to happen or shouldn't have happened. He's even admitted that out of his own mouth, to his own credit, that shouldn't have happened. And so you're like, okay, hit on the quarterback, problem solved. Nope, need the GM and need the coach. All right, hit on the quarterback and the coach. Oh, everything's cool. Nope, still need the GM. All right, well, we got the GM and we got the quarterback. Oh, but you don't have the coach. Like, to me, If you're really trying to get there, even where the Texans are right now, where they got all the hype, but they haven't actually won anything. If you're really trying to get there and position yourself to be there, you've got to hit on all three of those things. Like you need all of them, not one, not two, but the three. That's what's really hard about it.
I think that you look at like the Chiefs, where obviously Andy Reid, a move that I was skeptical of when they hired Andy Reid, because Andy Reid was coming off, you know, he didn't take an off year to kind of assess his life or anything. He'd gotten to a point with Philadelphia where he had all the hallmarks of a coach that had kind of maybe succumbed to cronyism a little bit. He's having some of his buddies play assistant coaches in roles that they really weren't suited for. He'd been through some personal tragedy in his life. And it was at the time I thought, man, if Andy Reid's going to get back into coaching, he needs to take a year off and just kind of reassess. But then he gets to Kansas City and they're doing well. But they didn't, you know, Alex Smith wasn't the right quarterback. And Scott Pioli, even though he's a really good GM, wasn't the right fit for the organization. And they end up, you know, getting Pat Mahomes, kind of a big deal. They end up getting a GM that Andy Reid works well with. And it's been a pretty good run for him. But it took getting those three things in place, really, to get it right. But it is also, man... And the Texans blessedly aren't in this position right now. But I do think, man, I try hard not to fault quarterbacks for whiffing, or I try hard not to fault teams for whiffing on quarterbacks over and over again, because some of it is just luck of the draw.
Yeah, I mean, what else are you supposed to do? Not draft a quarterback or not try or not invest? I mean,
yeah.
you got to take the swing.
It's why I didn't criticize Nick Caserio for drafting Davis Mills. It wasn't because I thought that I don't think that Nick Caserio drafted Davis Mills because he thought he was smarter than everybody else or that he saw something that nobody else saw. I think that Nick very much understands that it's a numbers game and that the only chance you really have at getting a quarterback is to keep taking cracks at quarterbacks. And you never know exactly which guys are going to be the ones that hit, as evidenced by Tony Romo or other, you know, Tom Brady or anybody else.
We've got Reginald Atatula and John P. Lopez from In the Loop joining us. Guys, we're talking about hitting on that holy trinity to success in football, being the GM, the head coach, and the quarterback. It's hard to do it with, it's almost pretty much impossible to do it with the one, hard to do it with the two, really need to do it with the three. And the Texans, it feels like, at least right now, they got to go out and do it, go out and prove it this season. But it feels like they've done a hell of a job of hitting on that holy trinity of GM, head coach, and quarterback so far.
I think you're absolutely right in that regard. And I think the thing that makes it kind of incredible is that, and maybe a little bit scary, because sometimes when everybody agrees on something, you look around and you go, are we missing something? But there's at least two of the three with all due respect to Nick Caserio that feel like no doubters, right? Like you ask anybody and everybody's like, we see it, right? When you talk about CJ Stroud and D'Amico Ryans and Nick Caserio, I think he's more than happy to lay in the cut in that way. So I think that you're really in a great place when you talk about that triumvirate.
Well, when you have those two, though, I think part of his job is to me, it's a credit to know, hey, don't stick your chest out.
Sure.
Lay in the cut. Know your role. Go out and execute. What do they talk about all the time? Execution.
That's right.
Hey, your job, once you hire D'Amico Ryans and draft CJ Stroud, your job is to go out there and execute trades, signings, drafts. Like, just do your job.
You don't have to be a super size support role.
You ain't got to be larger than life when you have guys like that. So I credit him for not having the ego that maybe was assumed that he would come here with, being a Belichick guy.
I think there's no doubt they have hit on all three. I think we can safely say right now, Seth, they've hit on all three because of what they've already accomplished. Now, the only thing that would derail them would be like an injury or a departure or something like that. But I don't even think it's a question. I think they've hit on all three.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's obviously a million different things can go wrong at any given point, but there's certain, I think the GM's the hardest to evaluate. And I think part of that is like, you know, GMs in the NFL rarely, unless they have a Super Bowl run or something, their first go around, most GMs don't get a second crack at it if it doesn't work out the first time. And I think it's because it's the hardest to evaluate. I think there's so many moving parts with a football team that it's, and because so much of it happens behind closed doors, that's why I don't know if another GM will do an offseason hard knocks the way the Giants did, because Joe Shane comes off looking really inept and incompetent in a lot of ways. You know, like when you do see behind the curtain, you're like,
I got to admit, though, I got to confess to you guys, you know, in the spirit of In the Loop being here.
Excellent.
Listen, I enjoyed it. And maybe because I'm not a Giants fan.
Yeah.
But I thoroughly enjoy. I wasn't even judgmental. Yes, you're correct, Seth. He did look incompetent, but I ain't give a damn. I don't care what the Giants got going on. He looked incompetent, but it was hella entertaining to me. I hope they do it. I just don't want my team to do it.
You know what it is? The problem with being a GM is that even if you're a good one, a really good one, there's a lot of failure involved. Most of your draft picks don't work out. You know, most of the guys on your team are not going to be on there for life. And some of them are going to be so most of your decisions don't work out. So when you try to judge a GM through the same filter that you judge a head coach or a quarterback, you know, the great quarterbacks have very few losing seasons. The great head coaches have very few losing seasons. There's great GMs that have had quite a few losing seasons at the onset of an organization. And if they can stick around long enough where it works out, then they get to enjoy the fruits of it. But there's a lot of guys that just get blamed for all of those bad years, even if it was the previous GM's fault.
Seth, I could look around last night at the Texans season premiere and just see the glow up of the organization. Obviously, the McNairs, Nick Caserio, D'Amico Ryans, Greg Grissom, like just look around and you could see the looks on everybody's faces and you could just feel the energy. We had a random stranger, I mentioned this earlier in the show, come up and say, "You ready to go to the bowl?" And I'm like, "What the hell are you talking about?" She's talking about the Super Bowl. I like that energy. I could feel the energy there. You know who else was there? These two fellas.
Yeah, darn right.
From In the Loop. You want to talk about glow up? They were sharp. They were looking good. They were working the crowd. I was just proud to be among them. So with no further ado, I'm going to go ahead and hand it off to them, Seth.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be. To be.
Sometimes in football, you need just a little more for that first down. You need to be pushing the pile. And on our new podcast, we'll give you that extra effort.
I'm Mike Renner, a longtime NFL analyst who helped develop player evaluation systems that every NFL team uses to this day.
And I'm Kyle Long, former All-Pro offensive lineman in the NFL who knows a thing or two about getting people moving.
You'll get expertise from inside the trenches and behind the tape for 4 episodes every week. So make sure you download and subscribe to the Pushing the Pile podcast on the Odyssey app.
Trying to figure out what to eat for dinner yet again? With Knorr Sides and Bouillon as your not-so-secret ingredient, you can skip the drive-thru and do dinner at home. Knorr Taste Combos provide a menu of delicious, affordable, and well-balanced meals that you can prepare in 30 minutes or less. Visit Knorr.com to get quick and easy recipe ideas for your home-cooked weeknight dinners. It's not fast food, but it's so good.
In life, some days are good, and some could be better. The same is true for recovery. Both take work. Both take adjustments. Finding your path is a key part of your journey, and then it's all about walking it every day. Embrace the good days, the not-so-good days, and the challenges, and acknowledge how you overcame them. Be open to every part of the journey and welcome it. It's unique, and it's all part of you. Find the path to recovery that works for you. Learn more at cdc.gov/stopoverdose.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.